Anna Sheridan, missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. How did I
Someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil. There's no place for ghost stories in this investigation, or any other.
I need you to find me.
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.
Come get some.
Beware, I live.
IGN GameScoop.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. I'm joined today by Ryan McCaffrey.
Hello.
Dan Stapleton. And Marty Silva.
Hey, guys.
Making his debut.
I am.
Appearance on GameScoop.
Very excited.
Be nice to him. And we're talking about Aliens, Colonial Marines, and more broadly...
Do we have to, Damon?
We do have to.
All right.
More broadly, the topic of whether or not some publishers paint their games in a more flattering light than they actually end up being when they're released.
I think we have a name for that, don't we?
That name is... Bullshot. That's
bullshot. Which is coined by Penny Arcade.
Yeah,
I think
okay, that's we owe them a nickel.
It's trademarks. Yeah. It's like Hawkware.
There you go.
Yes.
You owe me a nickel.
So yeah. Just put it on my tab. Bullshot is what we call like screenshots basically that have been doctored.
Yeah, photoshopped and the camera positioned in a way that is in no way representative of how it looks when you're at home playing the game on your TV.
It's fairly common. It's been happening for a long time.
Yeah. It's almost universal. I mean, everybody does it. Absolutely everybody. Pretty much the first screenshot you see of any game from any major publisher is almost certainly going to be
Doctored. Yeah, you actually pretty much never see a HUD until we take our own screenshots for an IGN review.
Exactly. But now Aliens Colonial Marines has received a lot of negative attention for trailers and gameplay demos that were shown off before release, right? And obviously the game was not reviewed very well.
Right. So they took it a step further where they released these videos and, you know, apparently being played of a game that looked much, much better. Mm-hmm. And then you know, when it came out, it's obvious that what they were playing is not what we're playing. Who knows how that happened exactly? It could have been...
Vertical slice, which I can explain if necessary.
Sure, yeah. Explain to the people at home what a vertical slice is.
When a game is being pitched to a publisher, a lot of them will do, developers will do what's called a vertical slice, where they'll actually take one little part of a game, like maybe a section of a level, and actually make it to completion, to like shipping quality, and then they pitch that to their publisher and say, this is what we're doing, this is what we're aiming for, and then the publisher goes, wow, that looks cool, we want that game, let's do that, and then they start making a whole game, and sometimes the final product, technical compromises, you know, memory limitations, whatever it is, you know, you can't quite live up to that one little tiny vertical slice.
And that's something that a lot of the things we see at E3, you know,
absolutely. Sure. You're seeing like a vertical slice that's been built for this.
And the bizarre thing for this is that even the sections that were shown in the vertical slice didn't look as good as they did when they were shown in the demos. So they had been taken and stripped way down, but probably redone. To a lower quality of standard, probably because of technical limitations.
Yeah, and it wasn't a video that, you know, looked cinematic to where you're looking at it like, oh, obviously someone's not playing this. It was a video that looked like someone was playing the game. It was first person, you had the gun, there was a HUD. And I mean, I think that's where a lot of this stems from, is that, you know, the press and then ultimately fans were lied to, ostensibly.
It's questionable whether or not they were lied to, right? I mean, like, what if,
is
you
it?
Know, I'm just saying, let me play devil's advocate. You know, you're working on a game for years, you show it at a public demo, but then what if there are changes happening during development, you know? You have budgetary constraints, maybe some things have to be cut. You know, that's not really lying to people, right?
Well, I mean, it is and it isn't, because, this kind of thing is kind of an industry standard to an extent. Like, even going back to, I remember, like, seeing stuff in Half-Life 2, where they had scenes... shown in trailers that were cut out. There were enemies that were cut out. And it's like, you could argue, it's like, oh, I thought when I was buying this that I would get that exact thing that I saw.
Right.
But yes, things do change and change, especially when games are in development for a long time. BioShock Infinite is another good example.
Yeah,
it's like
that was a vertical slice. The first time we saw that game was a vertical slice, and there was a section of that.
Yeah. And a bunch of it is faked, basically. It's not actual gameplay.
It never made it into the game.
Right, it's them saying, we want to, this is our visual target, this is the kind of gameplay we're going for. And like, if we want to see games more than like a few months out at all, then that has to happen. Like they have to say, here's what we're going for, but it not to this extreme.
The extreme of Aliens.
Yeah.
So we found out this week someone has brought up a class action lawsuit against Sega and Gearbox. The lawsuit claims that Gearbox and Sega falsely advertised Aliens by showing demos at trade shows like PAX and E3, which didn't end up being accurate representations of the final product, and that portrayed a level of graphical fidelity, AI behavior, and even entire levels not featured in the game. The suit explains that by having reviews under an embargo, so they're even bringing us into it, that lifted the day of release, consumers did not have time to learn from critics about the difference in quality in the final product compared to early footage. But that's very common.
I already was going to say that I think this lawsuit has a snowball's chance in hell of succeeding, but after that part, that's asinine.
Yeah.
I disagree, actually. I mean, I don't think based on the reviews. Let me back up. The thing that I think gives this thing legs is the fact that they were showing these demos and previews and this video even after they started taking pre-orders. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until after the pre-orders, like you couldn't cancel your pre-order anymore because it had been fulfilled, that it was revealed that that wasn't actually what you had paid for. So that I think is the damning part.
I see. But they have admitted some, I don't know if wrongdoing is the right word, but Sega agreed to add a disclaimer to the trailers that says they're not reflective of the final product.
Right.
And Randy Pitchford at Gearbox was tweeting with fans saying that he thought the concerns were understood and fair, and we are looking at that. Lots of info to parse, lots of stakeholders to respect. So they have acknowledged.
Damage control.
Yeah, they've acknowledged that something is not right. But in there, we have a comment from them on the lawsuit. Sega says, Sega cannot comment on specifics of ongoing litigation, but we are confident that the lawsuit is without merit, and we will defend it vigorously.
Right, I mean, they kind of have to say that. What else are they going to say? Yeah, we did that.
okay.
It's like there isn't much of a lawsuit then. Then you're just like, okay, we admit we falsely advertised this game.
If Star Wars Episode One had come out now, this same crap would be happening.
Yeah.
Why is that?
It's like, oh, I saw the trailer. It's the return of Star Wars. It's going to be the best thing ever. And then, oh, no, it's Jake Lloyd, and it's a terrible movie.
That's totally different, though. I mean, the trailers looked like, in fact, the final thing looks better than the trailers because they polished those effects. That's not saying we're going to give you a Star Wars story and it's going to look absolutely fantastic and then putting out the movie and it doesn't look fantastic. They didn't say they were going to give you a story they didn't give you. They just gave you a story you didn't like.
I feel like it's almost a call to arms for, you know, the general consumer to become a more educated gamer and, you know, wait for reviews.
By reading IGN?
By reading reviews. By waiting to...
Yes, I agree with you.
...the final opinion is.
However, the industry, at least the retail industry, runs on pre-orders, right?
Yeah.
Like publishers and GameStop.
Well, GameStop does.
Yeah. I mean, they need those pre-orders.
Amazon, to an extent, I suppose.
And publishers are all now, like, measuring how well they expect a game to do based on the pre-orders.
Right.
But and like that's why I think that the solution to this, which I hope arises from this case, but probably won't. But if I were making the calls, I would hold publishers accountable for delivering something that matches or exceeds the quality shown from the moment they start taking pre-orders. So it's like if you want to start charging people for this game, you have to you cannot show something that looks better than what you realistically expect to be able to deliver.
That's the big question here. I wonder if this fiasco will sort of teach publishers and developers in the future not to do this sort of thing.
It won't. Yeah.
Well, it depends on the outcome of the case.
Yeah.
If Sega takes a slap on the wrist for this and Gearbox too, like, and that will set a precedent that any time this happens, and at least a stark contrast between what was promised and what was delivered, that will, you know, snap them to attention. They won't want to risk being, you know, fined.
So they'd have to send like a $5 rebate to anyone who shows proof of purchase.
$5 off your next Sega game.
And a class action suit, that's how it would work, however much the judgment is for.
Yeah. Gearbox's comment on the lawsuit was harsher than Sega's. It said, attempting to wring a class action lawsuit out of a demonstration is beyond meritless. We continue to support the game and will defend the rights of entertainers to share their works in progress without fear of frivolous litigation.
I think it's impressive how just in a span of 6 months, Gearbox, you know, stock went down. I mean, honestly.
Well,
not literal stock. I mean, how the general game.
So they made Borderlands 2.
Two, which is great.
Amazing. And everybody was really thrilled. Yeah. And then
6 months later,
I actually agree with Gearbox in with their statement. I mean, I'm not. Aliens is a horrible game. I played through it. And the only reason I kept going is because it was so damn bad. I just wanted to be able to be part of the conversation and have sort of wear it like a badge of honor. But yeah. It's a video game. You bought it. It was bad. You move on to the next thing.
Well, sure. I mean, that is $60 of somebody's money that they paid for that thing, and they didn't get what they were told they were going to get. I think it's very reasonable to be upset by that.
But I think, to their point, I don't think gamers out there want developers to be like scared to show their product early, right?
Right.
No, and that situation.
But I mean, this is not them showing their product early. This is them showing their visual target early, yeah. And they knew at a certain point that they were not going to hit that visual target. And if they didn't think that they were going to be able to, they shouldn't have been showing that when they were taking pre-orders, because that is saying, here, buy this. This is what you're going to get.
Yeah.
So what about 5 or 6 years ago, I think, when Sony showed off Killzone 3, I think
exactly.
At E3 they showed off
exactly.
This first-person demo, and it looked like it could have been, you know, in-game. Someone was playing this, and it looked phenomenal.
Right.
And then the game came out, and yeah, it looked good, but it was nowhere near that. And if that was the only thing you saw, like if you don't go to IGN and read the previews, and that was the only thing you saw,
yeah.
You would be like, well, of course, I need to buy this game. And then the thing you buy, that does not look like that.
Right. I mean, there is obviously, there has to be some wiggle room if we want to see these games before a few months before release. Mm-hmm. And we kind of have to, like, or we don't have to, but it's nice. Like if you're following
it benefits, jobs it benefits publishers, certainly, to show yeah. their games and generate interest ahead of time.
Yeah.
Right. But as for the review embargo part, to get back to that, like I don't think that has a whole lot of merit, because that has nothing to do with advertising. Like what a reviewer thinks of a game is not. Reviewers can call developers on things or
yes.
publishers on things, and it does get the message out when things are not as good as they said they were. But I mean that's regardless of when the game actually comes out and that message gets out there. It has the same effect. So as long as you're not leaping before you look and pre-ordering, then you are insulated from that.
Yeah. I'm sure like publishers don't want us to tell you this, but like there's no reason to pre-order a game. It's not going to sell
there's
out.
There's really not.
They don't sell out anymore. Is. There may be a pre-order bonus, but it's probably a
I mean,
dumb,
I think don't isn't the usual the usual incentive that GameStop does is to guarantee your day one copy, otherwise we might run out.
Yeah.
But that never happens anymore. That used to happen.
They used to sell out,
on Super NES cartridges
yeah,
where
yeah.
they would physically get a limited yeah. number. But now, you know, these games are shipped out by the truckloads on disk.
And as a PC gamer who downloads everything from Steam and wherever, it's,
yeah.
like, it's even more preposterous.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it seems like we're getting closer to having console gamers being able to do the exact same thing.
The next generation will absolutely do that.
Yeah.
So, and there's the concept of pre-orders is absurd from that perspective. I mean, the only thing that motivates you to pre-order something is if they sweeten the deal. Maybe they give you a discount.
Sure.
Maybe they give you some extra DLC or whatever for free. And that's fine, but I would personally rather wait and see if this game is actually going to be any good before I put money on it, rather than saying here's 40 or 50 bucks for a game that might not be good.
The story of Aliens Colonial Marines is fascinating. There's probably a book in there.
Yeah.
So. Oh yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
There is
absolutely.
So much more.
I can't wait for it.
But I mean, if I was one of the games journalists who attended one of these preview events and saw this and wrote a glowing preview, I would feel like I had
which
it
we
my
did
face.
By the way.
Yeah. Well, certainly. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we were deceived.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, they showed us the same demo.
Let's
and we're like,
sue
hey,
them.
Great.
Let's get in on this.
Yeah. Right.
Right. So I mean, that was deceptive.
Yeah.
Like the stuff they showed was deceptive,
sure.
especially after a certain point. They didn't come out and put out like, okay, here's what it actually looks like now, and this is what we expect to deliver. And that to me is deceptive, and that is false advertising, as far as I'm concerned. I would if I bought it based on that, I would be really pissed off.
Yeah. Well, thanks, guys. We will continue following this story here at IGN GameScoop. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. I'm joined now by Ryan McCaffrey,
hello,
Anthony Gallegos, and
hi.
Mitch Dyer.
Star Wars.
And we're talking about the just announced news that EA has acquired the exclusive rights to license Star Wars games from Disney.
somebody's going to make Star Wars games because it sure as hell wasn't going to be LucasArts.
Well, not yet. No,
well,
not
they,
yet.
Were, they were going to make them.
They were trying.
So this is a multi-year exclusive licensing agreement. According to the announcement, EA will develop and publish new Star Wars titles for a core gaming audience. I'm sure a lot of people
That's us.
Yep. Will be happy to hear that. While Disney will still retain the rights to develop titles for mobile, social, tablet stuff, Angry Birds Star Legos. Wars.
I imagine that, that Telltale will still, Traveler's Tales will still continue to make Lego Star Wars games. Like, that's gotta be separate too. All
right. That's just too much money.
Nobody's walking away from that kind of coin, for sure.
But EA is gonna make games for us. They've already got three studios working on games, right? DICE, Battlefield developers. DICE is working on it, Visceral is working on something, and BioWare. BioWare has obviously been working on Star Wars for a while.
Well, the Austin studio. What we hardcore might call BioWare proper has, of course, been working on Mass Effect and Dragon Age.
Yeah, they're no doubt making Dragon Age 3 or something like that.
One of their teams.
Well,
So BioWare Montreal is doing Mass Effect, BioWare Edmonton is doing Dragon Age, and Austin has been doing Tor.
Right. These new games will be powered by the Frostbite 3 engine.
No surprise.
Yeah.
That means they're going to look good.
So yeah, that's what we know. Now, what do we want? What do we hope that they're working on?
Well, I hope that DICE finishes Battlefield before they even bother working on a Star Wars game.
They've got Battlefield 4 coming out this fall.
Yeah, so they need to work on that.
To your point, though, I feel like this might extinguish any hopes that I had left that Mirror's Edge 2 might actually be in development.
Right, Bad Company 3 for me? No.
Because if suddenly, you know, maybe they were, because they keep teasing, oh, Mirror's Edge 2 is too good to walk away from, we're not done with it. Yeah. So like maybe they were working on it, but now this Star Wars deal comes to the table, and they're like, okay, we'll just have the non-Battlefield team. We'll have the Mirror's Edge team. You guys will be working on.
Forget about you.
You guys will be working on this now.
Your best bet for ever getting another Mirror's Edge game is having like a side-scrolling mobile game, honestly. Like if they continue that story, it'll be done.
That doesn't count for me.
I'm just saying that the idea of a first-person Mirror's Edge game done by DICE. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
The first reaction a lot of people have seems to be Battlefront. Battlefront.
Everyone wants Battlefront. I just, honestly, and they're like, oh, and they have DICE. Clearly, they would just make a Star Wars game and make it into Battlefront.
Battlefront is already just a Battlefield ripoff.
But I bet you, like, I do not see DICE doing that. I don't know why.
I do.
My gut just says no.
See, I'm kind of in the middle, right? Like, you say yes, you say no. I'm in the middle where I think DICE will almost certainly do something multiplayer-centric, vehicle-centric like they have been. But it will just basically just be like a Battlefield version of Star Wars, which
and it won't
will
be
essentially
called
be a Battlefront, but it will not be called Battlefront. I don't think DICE is a company that will say, we'll take this existing IP and then, you know, and a sub-IP of that IP, Battlefront, and then just put our name on the box. Like, I think DICE will want to rebrand it.
It'll be closer to what First Assault was going to be.
I mean, maybe they'll have the balls to call it Star Wars Battlefield.
Yeah. Maybe. I mean, the thing
that
is...
That would be pretty awesome, actually.
No, yeah, it would.
Battlefield is their moneymaker, but Battlefront, you have to remember, was one of the biggest brands last gen.
Yes.
I'm not saying it still would automatically be the case now, but it's just a no-brainer for that developer and that specific IP to get together. And you know, why instead of... EA could have... Instead of alternating with Medal of Honor every year, which hasn't been going well, they could alternate Battlefield one year with Star Wars Battlefront the next year, and boom, money in the bank.
There's some people that, when this first came up too, were talking about that they were hoping that this meant that 1313 would get finished, because they can license stuff out. But I just cannot see that happen. Like, 1313, as far as I'm concerned, will die. It will be forever dead.
So, yeah, I think we should ask you about that. You don't think they're going to resurrect it?
You should put those hopes to rest forever.
I mean, the game.
What a shame, right?
Yeah.
But how far along was it, really? We don't really know.
I mean, it was early, but there were still levels made and stuff. But they weren't done in. First off, they weren't done in Frostbite. They were done in like a
proprietary thing,
a version of the engine they used for like.
Wait, was it Unreal
for like
or no?
Force Unleashed and stuff like that. I forget what that engine's called. No, it's like a weird mix of a bunch of engines.
Okay.
It just looked so cool, and like I want another mature Star Wars game.
Yeah, if anything, I could see Visceral. I mean, they have experience with things like Dante's Inferno, and so I could see them doing some sort of third-person slashing adventure with lightsabers, like a Jedi one or something.
When I think Visceral, think about the way Dead Space looks, but replace Isaac Clarke with Boba Fett.
Yeah.
Or the Republic Commandos.
Like yeah.
Or Republic Commandos. Oh my god, Mitch.
I would love a Republic Commando too. Like, if we're going to do any sequel to an existing Star Wars game, please make it Republic Commando.
Yeah, but the whole point about these games, though, is that if they're just now getting the licensing, which means they're all in pre-production, and the first movie, Episode 7, is supposed to come out in 2015, I would imagine that these are all Episode 7 tie-in games. They're all going to be.
Doesn't he
say? Maybe not about that.
Maybe not even.
I think he said that they're meant to be.
They're
going to
be original stories.
Yeah,
Stories, but they'll be tied into the future's lore.
Right. Like, so if Episode 7 is about like future Luke, future Han, future Leia, might be a little bit of a tie-in to like side characters in the movie or how they got there or something.
But a Battlefront lets you circumvent all that.
No, it does. It could literally. Yeah, I mean, that is a good point. But I'm saying these other games, I have to imagine, these will be not the Episode 7 game, necessarily, but tie-in games.
Whatever the villain is in Episode 7, like, if it's the reemergence of the Empire, you could focus on that in, a prequel action game that isn't, like, an Episode 7 colon the video game tie-in.
But I just think that as far as, like, people's, like, biggest hopes, like, we're going to get a new Battlefront. Maybe Battlefront is the most likely, but you're certainly not going to see a new X-Wing. Maybe, like...
Well, that franchise is pretty old, but...
There are a few...
Like, how many IGN readers know what X-Wing is, right?
It also wouldn't sell.
Yeah. Well, not necessarily. I mean, it was big in its time, but the problem is how many developers have the kind of expertise that it would take to make a space combat game.
That's the thing.
I think that.
Wasn't it just last year that we had Starhawk?
Yeah.
And that didn't make much of an impression.
That's true. That game was...
I mean, I just don't... You won't get an X-Wing. You'll probably just get... Third-person adventure games, more Lego Star Wars games, and then maybe something unexpected. Like,
what about Knights of the Old Republic?
Yeah, I mean, maybe. Maybe I could also see another.
We can dream, right?
What some folks may not know is, a lot of our viewers may know who Casey Hudson is, the project director on Mass Effect. The reason he got to be the project director on Mass Effect, a whole new IP at the time, was because he was the project director on Knights of the Old Republic 1. So. I tweeted today, I'm dreaming, like, that's would be it for me if Casey got to go back.
Yeah, it'd be tough.
And do KOTOR.
Because, you know, the line they've been towing for a long time is that Knights of the Old, Star Wars The Old Republic is supposed to be Knights of the Old Republic 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, right?
Yes, Anthony, but that's before they got this big fat Star Wars license. Things change.
Yeah, that's I don't true. Know. If I could see them doing another Star Wars RPG outside of Knights of the Old Republic.
See, that's what I want, is... Some original thing, right? Whether it's a shooter, whether it's an RPG, whether it's a flight combat sim, whatever. Like, I want to be surprised. I want them to do completely original things that we don't see coming. I want them to take the expectations we have for, like, a KOTOR or a 1313 or a Battlefront 3 and say, like, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to do this thing that's just as cool.
Sure.
I want to throw one more out at you guys. Visceral Jedi Knight 3.
See, that's what I'm saying, and that's why they already have the experience doing a third-person like hack-and-slash game, so now you put a lightsaber in his hand.
Yeah, make it happen. Powers.
And actually allow the lightsaber to dismember people. Like, it's been a long time since they've really allowed that to happen.
I guarantee you, with Disney in charge, you will never see that.
That's not necessarily true.
Yeah, I mean, you might be surprised.
You see Iron Man 3? Nobody dies on screen in that movie.
That's true, but, yeah, he's got a good point. We probably won't see any dismemberments.
Well, I'll take what I can get.
Yeah, me too. I mean, if it's good, I'll still play. I just hope that whatever games they make come out feeling finished. Because EA's put out a lot of games in the last couple of years that, in my opinion, felt rushed. Like, always rushed.
Like The Old Republic?
The Old Republic or Battlefield or, like, just game after game with them that's, like, just felt underbaked, like Medal of Honor.
In regards to BioWare in Knights of the Old Republic 3, I did remember that they're already working on the next Mass Effect, right?
Yeah.
But not there. Not in Edmonton.
That's in Montreal.
Really?
Okay.
Montreal.
That's in Montreal.
Okay, so they do have, theoretically, a studio available.
They must be working on Dragon Age. That's what everyone thinks.
Well, one team. They have multiple teams in Edmonton.
That's true. That's true. A friend of mine, Max Scoville, who works at Revision 3, was talking about how he'd like to see a Criterion develop pod racing game, and I'm totally on board with that.
Oh my god!
A pod racing game, like made Holy by like an crap. Awesome racing game studio.
So what if they did take their brands and like, so what if it's like Burnout Pod Racing?
Right? Sure.
Right?
<I'm there. laughs>
Right?
Except I can have crazy wreck modes, but with a pod racer.
That's all I want.
I'm all there.
That's the only game I want.
Yeah, just crash.
I think
modes.
We can end this segment right now.
Forget lightsabers. Who needs?
Yeah, I would play that.
Yeah, me too.
But you gotta figure, Damon, there's a lot, like EA, unless they got this license for a song, which probably not, like they probably had some suitors lined up.
Star Wars license, yeah.
EA's got a lot riding on this because they've been having some shaky financial times lately. Their CEO stepped down.
People love to hate on EA these days.
Yeah.
So I wonder, does this make EA look better or does it make Star Wars look worse?
I don't know. I just have to imagine this all comes out of the relationship they built through making The Old Republic together. Like,
probably,
now EA and Lucas have, like, this good established relationship. They know that they can deliver on a product, so... I imagine it just comes out of that for them. Lucas, like, we're not going to make games anymore. Who can we license to? Who do we already have deals with?
Yeah.
Let's just stick with one company as opposed to spreading it out.
Yeah, and despite, you know, the maybe not as big a success as the Old Republic was, you can't argue that EA creatively didn't go all in on that. I mean, what they put that massive, they built that Austin studio and said, and this said, this is what you're doing, and they really put everything they had into it.
Yeah, the Old Republic was in many ways a really risky and awesome game in some aspects.
Yeah.
Sure. So.
Well, thanks guys. Stay tuned for more video game talks right here on IGN GameScoop. Welcome back to GameScoop, everybody. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. I'm joined by Dan Stapleton, who is a PC gamer through and through, Anthony Gallegos, who has senioritis and will be surfing in Puerto Rico very soon.
Yes, it's true.
And Justin Davis, who loved Iron Man 3.
Big fan.
But we're not talking about any of those things right now. Maybe a little bit of PC gaming, because we're talking about World of Warcraft. Yesterday, Activision announced subscribers continue to fall. They've lost another 1.3 million subscribers, leaving the number at 8 million now. Last year, the last big expansion, Mists of Pandaria, was released, right? At that time, In 2010, there were like 10 million subscribers.
Right.
And in 2012, at its peak, 12 million people were paying $15 a month to play World of Warcraft.
That's not strictly true, because in Asia, the pricing modeling is different.
And 12 million people were subscribing.
A big chunk of their numbers are from Asian players.
Either way, they were making hundreds upon hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yeah, money was rolling in, and it still is.
Still is. Still a lot of people paying every month to play this, but that number keeps dropping. Let me start this off by making a statement. You guys can either agree or disagree. Last year, 2012, was the year that the subscription MMO died.
And World of Warcraft is the exception to that rule. It is still going strong. I mean, they lost 1.3 million subscribers this year. They could continue to lose 1.3 million subscribers every year for the next 5 years and still be bigger than anything else out there.
Yeah, like I guarantee you Guild Wars probably doesn't even break 5 million players. Like, I bet you it doesn't.
Yeah, probably not even.
I feel like they would have said so.
Yeah, it's
to promote that if it had. And I do agree that with your statement, at least partially, like, I think that making a subscription-based MMO in general is crazy, but they can keep letting themselves do it because they have such a legacy that's attached to it that they can just kind of ride that out. But I would be very surprised if the next World of Warcraft or whatever Titan turns out to be is a $15 a month subscription game.
Yeah, there's no way it will be.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the nice thing about free-to-play is twofold. From a business perspective, it makes you more money. You know, we've seen this over and over again. You know, Lord of the Rings Online revenues, they first said doubled, then they said tripled over where they were when it was a subscription MMO. And this isn't, you know, smaller companies like Turbine. I looked up just before we hopped in here that the Old Republic sales revenue doubled as well. So the Old Republic was an MMO on kind of shaky ground, not doing as well as EA wanted. They made it free to play, and it's making twice as much money now. But the second half of it is that it also, when it's done right, can be actually friendlier to the player than, you know, a $15 a month MMO. So it's kind of a win-win.
Sure.
I mean, I think that with comparing World of Warcraft to the Old Republic or Lord of the Rings Online, I mean, it's kind of a non-starter because World of Warcraft is so established and has millions and millions of people who are perfectly content to pay $15 a month, whereas if they would have to get many, many more millions of people playing for free in order to generate that same amount of money.
Well, I mean, I think so. The model that Lord of the Rings Online follows is if you play for free, you can piecemeal, like, I want to buy this zone, I want to buy that zone, I want to buy more outfits. Or if you pay $15 a month, you just get all of that anyway.
Right.
And so I absolutely think it's not a matter of if, but when WoW will do something similar.
Yeah, and you know, they have done something like that in that, you know, you can play up to, like, level 20 or
level
so.
Level 20, yeah.
That's a glorified demo.
It is. But then, you know, you want access to more content, you buy more access to more content. And it is a similar model in a lot of ways.
I think, the one that I have the most experience with, I guess I did play a lot of Guild Wars too, but I really think that Turbine did such a good job with Lord of the Rings Online because, you know, there's a variety of things that you can pay money for, you know, fast travel and this and that, but the bulk of it is buying quest packs. Like, you buy the quest packs for a zone and you can sort of buy, like, okay, I want to spend, you know, $5 or $10 or $15 to have this new area to explore in. And what I like about it is if I were to spend $15 a month just buying zones in that game, I have them forever. You know, if I stop spending, if I never spend another cent in the game, I still have everything that I paid for. Whereas if I pay $15 a month in WoW and then stop, then it's taken away from me. It's gone. And so when it's done right and when it's done, you know, really with sort of the big picture in mind, you want to keep your players happy. Free-to-play doesn't need to necessarily be a dirty word, or I think sometimes core gamers really recoil about it, and yeah, I think there are examples of it done really well.
Yeah, there's still a very vocal group who really hates free-to-play, and that's fine. You know, if you don't like it, you absolutely do not have to play a free-to-play game. But there are obviously millions upon millions of people who do, and that's why, and they're willing to spend money on these games, so that's why they're so popular.
People are just getting used to not paying for media in general, right? A lot of people don't pay for music anymore. They pay a subscription fee to Spotify.
Right, and just listen to it, whatever they want, much as they want.
I totally expect that, like, video games will just be like a subscription. You'll pay a subscription fee to some service and you'll just have all the games to play, right?
Yeah, if EA is absolutely noodling doing something like that, like pay an EA subscription fee and just
Valve
have access
Steam,
to stuff.
Just pay a $15 a month fee to Steam and then you can just play all their games.
Well, right? Steam's a little bit different.
Steam might someday do that, but yeah, for now they make so much money anyway. So
they probably have a package where you can do something like that, but yeah, that's a little hypothetical, but I think
the other thing about WoW is that, I don't know, all this news, and I didn't read IGN's news story, I don't know if we did this too, but it's couched in like such negative terms. You see it on message boards, like, oh, you know, WoW's dying, WoW's this, Blizzard didn't do enough, they didn't make these changes that would have kept the game alive. And like the thing is, this game's old.
It's 8 years old.
No, like, WoW is nothing but a huge success story, right?
Even now.
It's like, almost 10 years old. There's still 8 million people paying every month to play this thing.
Like every game on the planet, every game ever has a shelf life. It has a life where it's fun, sure. it's fun, and then eventually, no matter how awesome it is, you do move on. Maybe like StarCraft is the exception. Yeah. People will be playing that forever.
For most games, that shelf life is a few hours, right?
Yeah, that's true. Less than a week. Like you play it for a week and then you're done.
And so I think about people talk about how Mists of Pandaria didn't reinvigorate the franchise the way that they wanted or thought, and I'm like, this is just like this game. It's a graceful degradation now, as graceful as Blizzard could make it.
Absolutely.
Like,
so it's almost 10 years old. The world changes a lot in 10 years. The video game industry changes a lot. People's lives change. A lot of people are in their teens and early 20s when they start playing WoW 10 years ago. They're 30-something now and they don't have as much time to play an MMO. Like it makes sense. It's not like as dire a situation as many people make out to.
And there are so many free-to-play alternatives right now. They probably have a big problem getting new people in to replace the people that leave. They're bigger than they used to. And a lot of these free-to-play games are offering, you can jump from one free-to-play game to another and have a good time and never pay anything.
Yeah, so, I don't think I've played a free-to-play MMO, though, that is as good as World of Warcraft.
Oh, yeah.
I'll still say that.
That's virtually impossible but just the fact that they have been reiterating on this model for 8 years and have ironed out so many kinks that any MMO that launches, a few years ago, is still not going to have that level of polish.
And I'll clarify that Guild Wars 2 is not a free-to-play MMO.
Right. Well, that's what I was going to say. I like Guild Wars more than WoW, but it's
not a free-to-play.
No, right. And it's also not. I think the moment-to-moment gameplay and sort of the world is a lot more interesting than WoW's, but there's not the breadth of content there by any means.
So here's one question I have: do you think that if WoW went free-to-play, it would help or hurt the community of players there?
Yeah. In what way? That it would grow the community?
They could get more people, but you're saying that it might bring in...
Yeah, maybe the people that are paying would resent that.
Yeah. My concern is that when I'm paying a subscription fee to a game, I feel like I'm kind of obligated to play it. I will come back again and again because I want to get my money's worth out of it. If I'm not paying for it and I lose some momentum for any reason or I get distracted by something shiny, I will maybe not go back. And if I don't have a guild or something that's keeping me there, constantly pulling me back in, I don't feel like I have to go back to get my money's worth. And I think that a lot of that is present in WoW and keeping that momentum going.
Yeah, I could see it making less stable guilds and that sort of thing, where it's like people aren't, there isn't like the hardcore. You have people that just join and flake out all the time. And
I think there would be far, far more people in the game. That's the free-to-play model. But in terms of like hardcore, like, are you going to make friends? Like, a lot of people that are in WoW now, it's at social relationships. It's not even the game. It's a big, huge, fancy chat room.
Yeah, in a lot of ways.
Where,
yeah.
Like, these are real relationships that they've formed with people and real friendships, and that's what keeps them in the game night after night. And free-to-play is a little bit more flaky, like you said, or, people might come and go and not have that same sort of attachment.
A little bit more transient.
And it also comes down to what they charge for in free to play. Are they going to charge to make guilds and stuff? Then, you know, it's just.
The devil really is in the details. Like, free to play can be implemented really well or really poorly.
Yeah.
The reason why I single out 2012 as the year that the subscription MMO died is because of the Old Republic. Mm-hmm. It has arguably the biggest license in the world, right? The Star Wars license. And the game was good, right?
It was.
Any good game with the biggest license in the world should be a success. But it wasn't.
Yeah, I mean, I think there was even
success.
There was an old MMO, old Game Scoop, where I said that that game would be free to play within a year. And it was totally ugly. Everyone knew that that was true. Yeah, I mean, that was the only reason that game came out with a subscription fee is because there were investors who wanted a return on investment immediately. And then after they got that, they're like, okay, how can we actually make this
system? Are there any subscription MMOs left besides WoW?
Rift.
Rift is
a big
subscription.
One.
Is Terra
What about
subscription?
Eve? Is Eve Online?
Eve Online is also a subscription.
Which, in that, as I understand it, that's the only MMO that whose subscriber numbers have grown every year. Considerably smaller than WoW, but it keeps growing.
Yeah, and they're like 500,000, so it's nothing to sneeze at.
Yeah, not anymore, but it wasn't for a long time, right? Like, they sort of scraped by, and then slowly they hit some, like, hockey stick point.
Eve Online is its own... They're, like, on another plane. That stuff is crazy.
There probably is, you know, and it's so if there's a free to play MMO, like everyone categorizes a game like Lord of the Rings Online as free to play, but it has a subscription option.
Yeah. Well, all the free to play games have subscription.
Right. And I'm just saying we don't have clarity into how many people are playing those subscription fees. They just get lumped into this free to play category when there could still be, you know, 500,000 to a million or maybe even more people paying for it every month.
Yeah. Like Star Wars, The Old Republic, even though it's free to play now, definitely has the subscription model where it's like, unlimited access to dungeons and stuff like that, whereas if you don't pay, you get restricted access.
Well, and your UI is crippled, which is a big mistake they make. They limit the number of ability slots you can have, which that just enrages people, and rightfully so.
Sure.
Before we go, do we think, realistically, will World of Warcraft ever go free-to-play?
Ever? Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, eventually.
I mean, that's the end game for that game. It's just, like I said earlier, it's a matter of when, not if.
I could see it happening after they release their next MMO. Whatever Titan turns out to be, as they transition to that and they want to support that, that they could then shift World of Warcraft to be free.
What's the time frame on that? A year?
Good question.
2 years?
When it's done.
Yeah, they have
traditional
even,
Blizzard timing of when it's. They've never even shown it.
Yeah, they haven't said what it is.
Yeah. So. We just know that it's an MMO.
Even on Blizzard time, Titan has been. Like, I can't even imagine what's going on over there. Like, they've been working. When did they announce it? Like, or when was it leaked? 2008?
Like I don't know. Yeah, a long time ago. So I would say we'll hear about it this year, finally, at BlizzCon, because they're doing another BlizzCon this year. We'll hear about it and we'll find out what it is. But we won't see it for maybe a year or two.
Yeah.
That'd be my guess.
Thanks, guys. Stay tuned for more from your friends at IGN Game Scoop.
I'm a man out of control, but I've never had so much control.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to IGN Game Scoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. I'm joined now by Destin Legarry, Ryan McCaffrey, and Brian Altano, three human beings that recently got to see Watch Dogs again. They walked over to the Ubisoft office. You guys might not realize this, but the Ubisoft office is right around the corner from the IGN office. We have the same address.
We get their mail a lot.
It's true.
It's weird.
So you guys went over there, you saw Watch Dogs.
We watched a lot of dogs, actually.
You came back.
Dozens of them.
Everyone that had to stay in the office was like, okay, what'd you guys think?
Yep.
And the reaction seemed to be interesting. The game is interesting.
Yeah, I would say, first of all, like, the scope of this game is incredible. And it's one of those things that, like, we're actually at a point where it's so overprivileged of us to be able to be like, it had some problems. Because like 6-7 years ago, I would have been like, holy shit, this is the most amazing thing I've ever seen with my own eyes. But
does it feel next gen?
It
does.
It does, yeah.
So technically, for sure.
Yeah, I think just in terms of it's one of the most ambitious video games I've ever seen. And people throw that word around a lot. But I really feel like they're trying so much with this game. And there's so many things you can do. Like, every single scenario they showed us, they said, well, this might play completely different than the last time we demoed it, and the time before that, and the time before that. So pretty much every time they played it, you could go through stealth. You could disable everything using your hacking device. You could go guns blazing, kill everyone on the scene. You could do a mix of both. So that's what kind of impressed me about it, was it sort of felt like there's this open world thing, but it wasn't just like, you know, Nico Bellic's going to run up, shoot this guy, that's the end of the mission. Mm-hmm. Like, you could interact with everything differently. You were pulling at your phone and making a forklift move up and down, or making a car start on its own, and all these other things. So I thought They are onto something awesome here. It's Assassin's Creed in the modern times.
That's why I wanted Assassin's Creed.
Sure.
I think that's why you got the reaction like interesting, because like it's interesting, but it's a lot of the same mechanics we've seen before.
Yeah.
It's like Grand Theft Auto meets Assassin's Creed. Like there's this one mission he took us on where we had to hack into like a server, and it was a lot like Viewpoints in Assassin's Creed, where he went to the server place and there was some combat because it was in like a red zone.
Or like outposts in Far Cry 3.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so like, got to clear it out.
Well, I love that.
Yeah. It's a system we've seen before that's worked really well in like Far Cry and Assassin's Creed, but is it different enough to blow us away? I don't know, because we've seen it so many times already.
I'm still thinking, I mean, we've seen a lot of cool ideas and neat systems in Watch Dogs between E3 and then this week. Still not quite sure how they're all going to fit together in an interesting, cohesive narrative. And they sort of intentionally didn't show us any of that. They actually said up front, oh, we're going to screw around for 35 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is open fine. World.
It does a really cool job. There's a fly on the set.
I felt something. I was like, there's like ants on me or something.
It's Jeff Goldblum.
We're being watched.
Brindlefly.
It does this really cool thing of you're basically, this world really kind of feels like a world. And it doesn't just feel like this shell of a place. Like, you're walking down the street and you hear a song. You can hold up your phone, be like, what's that song? And then buy it on your phone using in-game credit.
Yeah, you can use an in-game Shazam.
Yeah,
sort of your in-game soundtrack.
Yeah.
So wait, are you really buying the song?
No. Well, so you're buying it with fake credits. Game money.
Yeah.
You can listen to the song in the game.
Yes.
But not like outside the game.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I think outside the game you'd have to use your real phone to do real Shazam.
Yeah, we can do that too.
Unless that song's only in the game. But you're walking around and you're like, there's a like this outdoor mall area and it's playing this kind of cheesy elevator music and you're like, I don't like that. So you click a button on your phone, you hack that. And
you
you're
playing
play
dubstep then.
Yeah, yeah, it's suddenly playing dubstep from your phone. Or you're walking down the street and you go, you know what? I want to play an augmented reality game on my phone in the game. And then now Aiden, who's the main character in the game that you're controlling, pulls out his phone, holds it up, and he starts shooting these like N64 polygonal aliens that are flying around. And all these people are in the streets playing with him, and they're just like looking like crazy people. Mm-hmm. So you can play video games
within this video game. It's all very meta.
Okay.
And that's all the fun side stuff. But
that's all of it?
That's it. That's Watch Dogs.
What about this iOS app, the companion app?
So, yeah, they were sort of hesitant to call it that.
But, they were we don't like the term companion app.
What term do they like?
The second screen experience.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Actually at E3 behind closed doors, they did show it. Like they held it up to us and showed it for like a second. And you know in the intro of all their trailers, it has like the wireframe buildings and stuff like that? It kind of looks like that with players all over the place. And they show it at the end of one of their E3 demos, actually.
They made it very clear. You'll be able to play on your console and someone else on their phone on the bus could be interacting with you in the game world. They didn't say how, but it's an interesting proposition. And although they did clarify as far as the multiplayer, there will be a strict player count. You know, it'll probably be 16 players or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's not a massive, completely connected online thing.
It looked sort of like you'll be at home playing Watch Dogs, and I'll be on the bus playing this top-down map version of Watch Dogs, where I'm disabling cameras for you, or I'm hacking devices for you as you're driving along. And there's a lot of hacking that happens on the fly, and some of us were talking about this. Like, most of the hacking that we grew up watching is, like, in the 90s was all, like, fat guys and their computers, they handle everything from here.
Or Sandra Bullock.
Yeah, or Sandra Bullock. Aiden is actually, he's got to hack out in the wild. Like, he's got to, like, to hack you, I got to look at you.
I don't want to be hacked.
What if you might get hacked in Watch Dogs this fall?
We used to play hack and slash games. What is Watch Dogs?
Now you hacktivate lifts to get up to rooftops.
So everything in this world can be hacked, which led to some interesting scenarios. Like, you hack a car and you steal it.
And then you don't have to break through the windows.
And there's stuff in the car you can take. Yeah. And then you get in a chase with somebody and you're following them, but you couldn't hack their car to make it stop. Like me, I would just hold my phone out the window and be like, stop, car,
well,
hack it.
You can hack the traffic light, turn that red, and try and cause an accident.
Right.
Or those barriers that are all over in the city for some reason.
Yeah, the city has these pop up barriers. So you're getting chased by a cop.
Apparently, those do exist
pop it
in
up.
Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Really?
I guess. Yeah. I mean,
I could see that.
Batman Begins, right?
The documentary.
Talking about car chases, though, one really cool thing happens. If you're driving after somebody and you're being chased by cops, you hit those barriers, and they hit it, it'll like do this slow down, then the camera will pan over.
It's very burnout.
It's really, really cool.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I mean, we saw some interesting stuff, and it's like, this is the thing though. Like, they base the whole premise on the reality of what happened a few years back in the
2003,
the blackout on the East Coast, where thousands of people lost power, 11 people died, and they're like, just because of this mistake that happened in the server tower, what if that was sort of manufactured by, you know, somebody playing a game like this? So it's very based in the real world. But at the end of the day, this is a video game. So you get a lot of really ridiculous video game scenarios. Like, for example, he's like, all right, we're going to go investigate this scene. Now you hold your phone up and you start scanning and hacking, and everything it says, it'll be like, Destin's a smoker, you know? Ryan loves internet porn.
Yeah.
You know?
Nailed it.
So it has little things, and it's just like, oh, this guy's going to commit a crime. And you don't know how he's going to do it. It's just sort of like the
crime
number.
Probability like
of like, this guy loves to get beaten up. This guy loves to beat people up. They are in a probable scenario together. So yeah. Let's go stop it. So you run up. Yeah. So you run up, and Aiden sees this guy, and he takes a club.
Yeah.
And he hits this guy and knocks him to the ground and then runs off. And you're like, I better stop that guy. So you get into a car that you hack and steal. He gets into a car that he steals. You chase him all the way across town, smashing into him, smashing all sorts of things.
And you have a focus ability you build up, I think, by hacking, by doing hacks. Mm-hmm. So then you can slow down time and shoot out his tires.
Yep.
And that's how you got him out of the
car. So he got out of the car and he's like, whoa. And then you shot him in the chest four times. So now you've escalated this single baseball bat beating across an entire city where people are like, holy crap, what's going on? There's a car chase, trucks are spinning out of control. And you get out and you shoot this guy four times. You're like, don't use bats.
Why?
Because vigilante justice.
Yeah.
Well, there was another scenario that was a little more serious. Mm-hmm. You overheard like a text conversation between two friends. He's like, tell me where he is. No, man, like, you're gonna do something crazy. He's like, he raped my wife, tell me where he is. So this guy's like, all right, he's usually found here. So you track this guy who's gonna go find
to an alley, of course.
To an alley, and then you see the other guy who's like has a history of sexual assault. And the player who was playing the game just didn't
let it happen.
Mm-hmm. He just let it happen. The man came up, shot him, walked away.
Yeah.
And you were just like, yeah, that's fine.
So you could have intervened, but you're kind of sitting there going, rape's bad, so I'll let this guy get his justice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then a second later, you're on the news for killing the guy, so.
Yeah. No, not that guy. It was for the murder earlier with the baseball bat guy who you shot in the chest.
Wide open public spaces. Yeah.
And you got another kind of Assassin's Creed scenario where every time the guy pulls up his mask, everyone's like, I don't know who that is. He's eating his T-shirt. Like, we'll never catch him.
Technically, the game was really impressive. It's not immediately apparent. Like, you look at it and it's not like, oh my God, the next generation of consoles is here. But the more you kind of look at it, like, the trees were all really nice. The lighting is spectacular. The detail in the city, the waves down in the river with the boats heading down. I mean, it maintains this really, really high level of detail that we arguably didn't see from Grand Theft Auto V when we saw it a couple weeks ago, not being a current gen game. So it's that extra, you know, 7.5 gigs of RAM going to work.
But. And they did say things like Aiden's able to pretty much scale any structure in the city. So it's the closest we're going to get to a modern day Assassin's Creed.
Really. Yeah. And I mean, technically speaking, I'm a little nervous about how it's going to look on current gen consoles, because it is coming out on 360 and PS3. Because obviously what we've been seeing this whole time
is
totally high octane, you know, next gen consoles, meaning. Also high-end PC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I think you're gonna want to play it on your next-gen console.
I saw it behind closed doors at PAX East, and it looked like it was running on current gen, and it didn't look that good.
Really?
Like, they sacrificed a lot of graphic, it's still
super,
months out. So,
yeah, and it looks super pretty on the new tech.
For sure.
So before we go, review the demo that you saw on the IGN scale, Destin.
Oh, wow. Just the demo, because it was open world and no story or anything, I'll give it like an 8.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, you want me to put a number on it?
You got to review it on the IGN scale.
Yeah.
Yeah, without story, because I really want to see where this story
goes. I'm a story guy, too.
Yeah, so. A lot of interesting principles.
Interesting is that word again.
Yeah. I'll agree with the 8.
All right. I'm going to go 7.
7, okay.
Oh.
Good.
Yeah.
Good, but not great.
There were some technical issues I saw, and it's a very early build, but there was a lot of screen tearing. Mm-hmm. And that's obviously something they're not going to ship the game with.
That
happens
all the time. Pre-release.
But, you know, we didn't know much about the story. We don't know much about the characters. Some of the characters we saw are just sort of like these generic 90s hacker-looking types. But I have a feeling there's going to be so much to do in this game, and I think that's what it's really going to come down to.
I'm also really curious to see how big the Chicago is, because, you know, we've seen some controlled demos so far, and they are promising a big open world, so just how big is Chicago going to be? I'm real curious.
Loading times from the east side to the west side of Chicago.
It's traffic,
that
Dustin.
That would be bad.
It's just
that
traffic.
Would be so
you're stuck
bad.
In traffic.
You're just hacking. You're waiting for the hack bar to
Yeah.
Thank you, Dustin. Thank you, Ryan. Thank you, Brian. My name is Damon. This is IGN GameScoop, and we're out.
You screw around and you get people hurt.
Or worse.
Anna Sheridan, New York Times best-selling author of supernatural horror. Missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. Is the compass broken? Or did I turn to the side path?
Given the circumstances of her disappearance, someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil, so to speak.
Weak radio signal. 700 meters. Closing fast.
There's no place for ghost stories and close encounters in this investigation, or any other.
I need you to find me.
To save yourself.
Of course.
What else would it be?
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.